Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
Zach Zateman.
We're live on the radio.
Cubs radio pregame and postgame host.
Here's the pitch. Swung on and hit to deep center field. Way back. Duggar at the wall. Leaps. It's gone. A home run. Chris Bryant,
former Bears radio sideline reporter.
Down here with Jay Cutler. What were you guys trying to do on that play to Martellus Bennett?
I'm trying to score.
A guy with a great head of hair.
And what color would your hair be, Zach?
Luscious red locks, Pat. Thank you so much for asking. It's real and it's spectacular. Some would refer to it as Syracuse orange.
Zach Zateman.
The ginger hair genius. He was a hit yesterday, right, guys?
With Molly and Hall on 670 The Score.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. Tom Thayer in for Mully. And now it's time to go out to the Home Run Inn hotline. Try your pizza on the grill this summer. Visit homerunin.com for unique grilling recipes and more. And that is where we find Chicago's worst driver, Zach Zateman. Could that be? Morning, Zach.
Easily.
Oh, my goodness. So let me guess. Tom told you about the story in New England where... the Bears were getting ready for a joint practice against the Patriots. Picked up the rental car the night before, and who checks the inventory of a rental car at night when you first get it? You know, you usually have to drive it for a little bit, and then you realize what's wrong with the rental car, because I'm sure Tom let you know that there was some mechanical issue with the side mirrors on the car. So I figured this out as I was trying to enter the ramp on Interstate 95 in Providence on our way to Foxborough. And I couldn't see because we didn't have any side mirrors. So I took a chance. I gunned it a little bit. And, you know, I almost took his life. You know, we almost got hit by a semi. But big deal. They live to tell the story. And now we can joke about it. But, of course, it's a story that will live in infamy.
I still have residual effects from that drive. I've never been almost sideswiped more by semis in the history of 1 week of football practice than driving back and forth with Zach Zateman.
Well, the drive was more interesting than the practices. I remember after watching the first practice between the Bears and Patriots that season, and I remember going on the air on The Score and saying it was going to be a long year, and I believe I was right. It was a very long year for the there's some hope heading into this upcoming season. Can't wait.
Well, Zach, there's a great picture of you and Coombe and Pat Hughes in the company SUV, I believe, pulling out. It's on robertfeeder.com. You are in the passenger's seat where I think Tom said you belong. And Coombe is driving. Pat's in the back. How would you describe the drive from Chicago to St. Louis?
It's a long drive, but it's an entertaining one because it's like listening to a Cubs game without the radio. That's essentially what the drive was like. You get Pat, you get Ron in an enclosed space, almost like a broadcast booth, but moving for 5 hours. And the stories come flying. And it was a lot like what people listened to last night in terms of the fun stories, the visits with Mike Shannon on his radio show with Coombe and Pat. That's the kind of stuff. And you're in stitches the whole drive because the stories are so awesome. And I think that, to me, is what I'll remember from the trip. And it was definitely much more memorable than game one of this four-game set.
But, Zach, when you look at, all the conversations about what's going on with the Cubs, who's coming, who's staying, it seems like when you see that first inning catch by Ortega, it seems like there's always a little bit of surprise that that was unbelievable. And you thought, wow, this may be something that's good, for what's to come, because at the beginning of the game, you save a couple runs like that. So when Ross talks about the attitude and the effort and what's going on, it seems like they still have a really good attitude inside the dugout and the willingness to go out there and play hard.
Yeah, I don't think it's an attitude thing. I don't think it's an effort thing. I think ultimately, and you know this better than anybody, Tom, this is a and there comes a point where you have to say, if you're not getting the production that you believe you should, how do you go about creating the results that you need? And I think that's why this has become such an issue. I think it's a very difficult thing. It's taxing mentally. I've never been, I don't know how I would handle it if I was in a situation where I knew that I don't have a complete season in order to make something happen. I have a short amount of space in which I have to produce results or everything could change. And I think that's the situation that this core. It's not just this year. See, to me, the thing that you start to take a look at is 2018, 2019, 2020, very similar to some of the issues that we're seeing here in 2021. The biggest exception, though, is the lack of victories that you're seeing in 2020, what you saw in 18, 19, and 20. The offensive issues are there, where it's feast or famine. There's too much in terms of the striking out. There's not enough in terms of the slug. There's not enough in terms of taking advantage when the opportunities present themselves. And a great example is yesterday in the fifth inning. Cubs load the bases. They end up with one run on a double play ball by Ian Happ, but they don't capitalize. They don't pounce on those opportunities. And then you see some mistakes that occur, and whether it was the 11 walks that were issued Sunday in Arizona, yesterday it was the defensive miscues, and not just the errors, but some of the things that make you shake your head when you watch them play defensively, which is rare. That doesn't happen often with the Cubs, but it happened last night. But it just seems as though those things keep popping up, different things that impact the win-loss column. And I think if you're running the Cubs, and Jed Hoyer is now, this is the opportunity where you have to say to yourself, okay, trading deadline's July 30th. I have to start looking at the business of baseball and the contracts that I'm dealing with and the names that I'm dealing with. How do I go about creating the change that I need to get the production that hasn't been there, even though when you think of this core, you think of everything that happened in 2016, but 2016 is a long ways away when you look at the rearview mirror, and you're not getting close to the results that you got back then.
You know, Zach, you spent a long time around football. You spent a long time around baseball now. When you think of the contract scenarios that present themselves in football, it's a distraction during the offseason, and then there's a line, and then you don't talk about it much during the season. Is this become a distraction within itself, where you have the guys that are under the contract scrutiny worried about what the future is going to be, but then you have some guys in a backup role that think that they could take the spot of some of these guys that they don't really have great concerns for the marquee guys that are going through the contract scenario. So there's got to be a difference of distraction between the two sports.
I had a long talk with Anthony Rizzo yesterday about this on the pregame show, and he kept saying, I have to take a look at this on a game-to-game basis. I've had a conversation with Kyle Hendricks about this. I even had a conversation with Jock Peterson about this prior to the trade to Atlanta, because he went through it last year when he was with the Dodgers, where he knew the contract was an issue. You know your future's up in the air that's expected to win, and the Dodgers were able to handle it. He was able to handle it. They ended up winning the World Series last year. I don't think the Cubs have done a very good job of handling it this year, and they can say that that's not something they're thinking about. But let me spin it around and ask you this question, because out of the three of us talking here, who played sports at the highest possible level. So if you knew that you had to show results, a certain kind, and I don't know what the magical winning number is, but you had to be in contention by a certain point, say the trading deadline in the NFL, and you knew that if you weren't in contention at that point, that the team would be broken up, even though you look at the NFL today and you can go through Thanksgiving and not really know who's going to end up winning the division. The Bears of last year, perfect example. You know, if you listen to Mully and the Bears and see that there's no chance that this team could make the playoffs as late as Thanksgiving. And what do you know, by the end of the year, the Bears somehow found a way to get in. I think baseball, more so than the other sports, is a marathon, not a sprint. But I don't think you have that luxury this year with the trading deadline on July 30th.
Zach, I think that your access, you took advantage of it immediately. You had the conversation with Anthony Rizzo that you referenced. It was on the pregame show. And I thought it was very telling, and I wondered if you had the same sort of reaction to it that I did. You gave him an opportunity to say, okay, do you hope they keep the gang together? Do you hope they give you one last chance to kind of prove that you belong, you know, to save everything before it gets dismantled? He didn't really take the bait. He didn't really take advantage of that chance to say, all right, yeah, we can prove this. He kind of like said, okay, we need to play one game at a time and kind of it'll take care of itself. I thought that what he didn't say said everything.
Yeah, I think that when you look, and he's realistic about it too, when you look at this group as is, they understand that changes are coming. They don't know how much. And I think Jed Hoyer has been candid in terms of talking about how changes need to occur, but this isn't going to be a full-on rebuild. And when you say that, you understand that, especially if you're a player like Rizzo, you may not be a future of this group as is. So I think it's a very difficult thing to come out and say, hey, yeah, you hope you put the group together from that. He wants to stay here. The other thing is that there's an understanding that there needs to be necessary changes, even for those players that do end up staying here, in order for them to be able to get to where they want to go. You know, when I first started covering the Bears, Lovie Smith used to have a saying, people would ask him about the quarterback position, players let you know. Well, the players are letting Cubs management know. They've lost 15 of their last 19. They find themselves fourth place in the National League Central. They're 9.5 games behind first place Milwaukee. So a lot of good feelings that people have when it comes to the group that helped win the championship in 2016. This is the reality that the Cubs are in now. And then you start to take a look at the recent history. You know, last year they made the playoffs in the shortened season, but the offensive issues were paramount. In the playoffs, they got bounced early. 2019, they didn't even make the playoffs, and they had that epic collapse to close out the year, and that cost essentially Joe Maddon his job as Cubs manager. And then in 2018, what happened to this team? They kind of faded down the stretch. There were major offensive issues, and they got bounced out early in the playoffs by the Rockies. I think they're showing you who they are, and clearly some changes need to be made if you want to get back to that level that the team was in back in 2015, 2016, and 2017.
Zach, when you look at the marquee names who are in these contract scenarios, what type of pressure does this put on David Ross, not only as the manager but as an ex-teammate and living through some of the experiences he did with those guys, but the difficult decisions that he's going to need to make in case things really go haywire here?
Yeah, I think the thing that Ross keeps talking about, and he has a positive and optimistic disposition, and you can hear it in his press conferences because, you know, he has a lot of faith in the core players, but it's the core players who can probably bring back the greatest return. And it's not just that. I think the bullpen has been so good. When you look at what helps you win games this year, especially from a managerial standpoint, it's your effective use of the bullpen. And the bullpen has been terrific for the most part this season. You know, the big issue for the Cubs has been, in my opinion, the inability after Kyle Hendricks to get consistent starting pitching for a variety of different reasons. And then in terms of the offense, it's feast or famine than not. It's been famine as opposed to feast. So how do you manufacture the kinds of runs you need to manufacture in a game where the manufacturing of runs isn't as big of a deal anymore as the ability to slug? This is a team that was built to slug that's not slugging at the rate that it needs to. So for it's an issue, but you know, as Ross keeps saying, his job is to manage what he's been given. So that's the way he looks at it. And I think ultimately from Jed Hoyer's standpoint, you know, we keep saying that all these guys are going to be leaving. We don't necessarily know. You know, the rest of the league is seeing the struggles that the Cubs have put together. I think when you start to take a look at what are the most marketable aspects of this team, it starts with the bullpen. And it's not just Craig Kimbrel. There's several other guys in that pen that I think would be very valuable to other teams. To the core, just because you hold guys in high regard based on what they were able to do in 2016, does that mean that the rest of the league still holds those guys in high regard? And can you truly get what you think those guys are worth? And that's the difficult challenge over the next couple of weeks.
Great stuff, Zach. Before we let you go quickly, did Coom let you listen to your own music on the way down, or did he force his on you?
You know what? I should have said this. This was the best part about the trip. The radio was never on because it was 1 5-hour conversation the entire way through. Who would ever want to turn on Pat Hughes telling stories? And you guys know what a people person Coom is, and his stories are so great. You know, there was one point where we were rolling down 55 and we're passing through near Midway, and you know, that's where Coom grew up. And he's basically taking us on a tour of his childhood, played Little League, you know, back in the day. And it was great. It was a This Is Your Life for Ron Coomer as we were flowing down the South Side. And it was an opportunity to hear Pat tell his great stories. So, yeah, the radio was never on. You did hear a lot of me laughing. I don't know if you've ever heard that on the air, but there was a lot of that.
That's great.
Of the trip to St. Louis. It was a lot of fun.
Have fun in St. Louis, Zach. Thanks. Great stuff.
Thanks, Zach.
Hey, by the way, Anthony Rizzo, interviewed him yesterday. Every time I interview him, he has big games, had multiple hits last night.
So what time are you talking to him tonight?
Tell him that. Yeah.
Zach Zaidman down in St. Louis does a great job pregame, postgame, and the fifth inning. Fun stuff.
Yeah, I wish that would have been a fun trip to be a part of. That 55 goes right by Joliet. I'm on that highway with regularity.
How about score tours? We could go through Coom's old neighborhood. We could go through Joliet. We could have, you know, a lot of the – just give listeners a chance to
Coom
kind
could
of
– be the – you know, it's like the Kramer tour.
That would be great.
The Coom drive-in.
All right, we're going to shift gears. We have a treat next. We have an ex-Notre Dame teammate of yours coming on. Also, he's dabbled in radio a little bit. His name is Mike Golic. Next on Mullion Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. Chicago Sports Station.
Mullen Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. Oh, the Notre Dame fight song, of course, with Tom Thayer in for Mully today. And it's time now to go out to the Home Run In hotline. Try your pizza on the grill this summer. Visit homerunin.com for unique grilling recipes and more. And that is where we find the new analyst for Learfield IMG Radio Network. Mike Golick will be doing 13 games this college football season alongside Kate Scott doing the play-by-play. It is a pleasure to welcome Mike Golick to The Score. Good morning, Mike.
Good morning. I'd like to just talk to Tom now. We'd like to do a Notre Dame thing, so you can go ahead and step aside.
That's great. Go ahead. You guys can have your little Notre Dame alumni party.
Hey, Mike, this is a big thrill for me. I've been waiting years to be able to talk to you on the radio, on the waves, because I feel like, you know, raised right alongside of you. I've known you since we've been 17 years old and got to meet every member of your family, your wife, Chris. Just an unbelievable job that you've done since we left Notre Dame. And like I said, proud to be able to talk to you.
So the first, me too. I mean, it's been great to become friends with you over the years, but I'll never forget the first encounter. It wasn't that great for me anyway. My freshman year back here at Notre Dame in 81, you know, all the freshmen reported early and we all worked out with one another. And I remember myself and Mike Gann, one of the other D linemen that came in with me, were doing pretty well against the other freshmen and such. And then the vets came in and all of a sudden, now we're going against Thayer and Philpott, Derek and such. And, man, our world changed really quick. That's that realization when you walk in as a high school star into a college program that all of a sudden when you find yourself back at the bottom of the totem pole pretty darn quickly. So that was not the greatest introduction in the world, but, you know, luckily became great friends over the years after that.
Mike, just think of the money that we'd be making right now as the heralded, you know, big time recruits that we were at Notre Dame. And if they were paying like they are now, man, we'd already have a budget.
You know, the thing about it is we as former players, way former players, we sit there at times and say, man, look at the money the players are making, the NFL players are making today. If we were playing in this time, we could have been making more money. Now for us, it goes all the way back to college. Man, if NIL was around when we were in college, you know, think of the deals we could have done. But I'm happy for the players today in all the sports. I hope they all take advantage of it and can get what they can get without question.
Mike, what was Tom Thayer like as a teammate and as a team leader back at Notre Dame?
Well, I mean, I was a freshman, so he never talked to me. You know, I'm kidding. Listen, it was when I got there, it was certainly new. Now, Tom and his teammates went through a coaching change. You know, I didn't do that. I came in with Faust, and for Tom and the group, it was a coaching change. So I had to adjust to college. They had to adjust to a new coach. And a coach, and you know, unfortunately, and I won't sit here and blame the coach for all that. We're the ones on the field that were playing. But, you know, the years there, I know I had three different position coaches. when I was there. And the years didn't work out all that great for us. But like anything else, when you say it, you know, it's one of those experiences you don't trade at all. But every now and then, you know, I have a house here on campus, and I take my dogs on a bike ride around the lakes. And every now and then we pass Monroe Seminary, where we spent nights before the games. You know, now, you know, hotels and nice TVs and everything. But we were staying in a seminary the night before games. So it was pretty wild back then. But listen, I enjoyed it. I had, from my brother Bob being here in 1975, I was 12 years old, to me graduating, and then I have three kids going here. I mean, Tom knows. I mean, Notre Dame is just such a special place that you hold great memories for.
Yeah, you know, the Golic family had a legendary status when I went to Notre Dame, because everybody knew Bob Golic and how successful he was. But, you know, Mike, I kind of wanted to ask you, because you and Bob have such a deep background in wrestling, and Bob was a two-time All-American. You were All-American wrestler there. When you look at this Adam Kuhn that is signed to go play football with the Tennessee Titans, give me your take on a football wrestler transferring those type of traits and try to become a football player at this level.
Well, it transfers incredibly well. I can say wrestling helped my football immensely. I don't think it flips the other way. I don't think playing football helps wrestling. But as you know, Tom, I mean, within a split second of an offensive and defensive lineman engaging in one another, they know leverage. How quick can you realize leverage? And if you don't have the leverage, how quickly can you replace hands or move feet to gain leverage? You know, there was other great wrestlers who played football. Stephen Neal with the Patriots, Carlton Hasselrig, you know, with the Pittsburgh Steelers. He was a hell of a wrestler. So, but these guys played football as well. Kuhn stopped playing football. So that's going to be an interesting scenario. So from a feel and a leverage standpoint, I think he'll be just fine. But he hasn't played. You know, he hasn't been getting hit from all angles, you know, time and time again, doubles, comboed, you know, and things like that. Guys going low on him. So it certainly will be an adjustment. I've watched him wrestle. Stevens had been the guy, the big-time wrestler from Minnesota in the NCAA. And Kuhn, I know, hadn't gotten past him. But I know he was right up near the top of one of the better wrestlers. So I loved wrestling just as much as football. So I hope the guy makes it. I think it's going to be tough because he hasn't played football in a long while. But like anything else, how quickly can you adapt to your surroundings?
Talking with radio legend Mike Golic, who is going to be working this season, 13 games for Learfield IMG as an analyst, Mike. And I just wondered, how excited are you about this new venture and challenge? And it's going to be 13 games. It's going to be college football. It's going to be a lot of fun, I would imagine, going from city to city and seeing college football back with fans in the stands.
Well, you know, I call college football right out of the pros. I retired in 94 and started working with ESPN doing an NFL show. And then I was calling games for them and ABC all the way until 2005. I said, when my first son, which was Mike, got to high school, I was going to stop working weekends, and I did. So I stopped from 2005 to basically last year as all my kids went through high school and college. So I had done it for 10 years, and I've always loved calling games. So I finished up at ESPN calling games, and I wanted to do it again this year. I didn't care if it was TV or radio. It didn't matter to me. And, you know, Learfield, I'm also doing kind of a it'll be on an app. It'll be a game show called The Fan Exam. So I'll be doing that with them during the season. I just love calling games. I still may call NFL games for a different place. I'm deciding between a couple of podcasts to join as well. So I'm going to get busy again. You know, when I finished, I basically told my agent, don't call me for like 6 months, you know, let me see what sleeping in is like. And, well, those 6 months are up, so it's time to jump back in. I don't know if I'll jump back in as full as I've been before, but I love talking sports and I love calling games, so I'll get back into it.
You know, Mike, I remember once a few years ago I texted you behind the scenes because we were in the conversation about the NFL expanding to 17 and possibly 18 games. Yep. Now they're up to 17, and I don't know, what is your opinion now about that? Are you for it? Are you against it? Because having my experiences in the USFL, we had no preseason games, but we had 18 regular season games, so I'd like to get your thoughts on it.
Oh, I listen, guys can handle it. I mean, I think they can. I mean, especially with, listen, the players, I've always said this about the union, you prioritize what you want to fight for. And one of the things players wanted to fight for was an offseason that wasn't as intrusive and a preseason that didn't require two practices in a row with pads. So vet players wanted to chill a bit in the offseason and the preseason going into the regular season to save their bodies. Well, you get that, you have to give up. It's all negotiation. So if you're going to go 17 games, you're going to go 18 games. I think players can handle it. But you come out and you say, oh, no, we don't want to do this. Because everything, as you know, Tom, is negotiating. Everything is negotiable. You want to go to 17, what are we getting in return? You want to go to 18, what are we getting in return? So it's just a matter. And I think that's unfortunately one of the tough parts for the NFL union anyway has been everybody staying together. Because you got guys making 500 grand and guys making 40 mil. Guys have – just when they signed the last one, there were – veterans speaking out on because it was a better deal for the working class, and higher priced veterans were speaking out that it was a bad deal. Hell, in 87, we had a wildcat strike. We all walked out, and it was the rich players, the high salary players, they crossed the picket lines. And once that happened, it was over. So what can players agree upon and fight together for? I think they can play 17. I know they can. I know they can play 18. But what are you going to get in return for that, to me, is the key.
Mike, I know it's been tough to get you and Tom on the air together, but you guys have been on the field together against each other as opponents. The Fog Bowl was one of those times. Yeah. What do you remember about that moment here in Chicago?
I remember not seeing a lot of players. Here's the one thing I remember, because they did not want to postpone that game. I remember the ref. Because they kept asking, can you see down there? Can you see down there? And I remember one time the ref saying, yes, I can see both. He was in the middle of the field. I heard him say, I can see both goalposts. I'm like, what the hell are you looking at? I said, see both goalposts? I said, we could barely see 10 yards. You know, that was a crazy experience. And when you look back on it, you had to think the team that was going to be in the lead when that rolled in, and that was Chicago, was probably going to win that game. That was... You know, we've all played in slop. We've all played in snow and cold and rain. That was a first for me. When you see a guy running around end and he disappears into the fog, I mean, it was crazy. Now, obviously the lines, we could see one another. We were right there. But any kind of passes downfield or anything, you know, 10, 15, 20 yards downfield, that was kind of a fog area or a gray area. But that's the thing I remember most. The one ref saying, yeah, I can see both goalposts, because they did not want to send the fans home and come back another day. They wanted to get that game in.
Hey, Mike, you know, you played in one of the greatest defenses in the history of the NFL. When you talk about that Philadelphia Eagles defense, you played for Houston, you finished your career at the Miami Dolphins, but you're a legendary Cleveland family. So when you're looking at football from this side of the world outside of Notre Dame, where are your professional loyalties?
It's pretty interesting because, you know, I played most of my years in Philly, but I really don't know anybody there anymore. And then covering it for so many years, I always had a kind of an affinity towards Philly, but like I said, I don't really know anybody, but I love the city. Houston, I was only there a couple of years. Miami, I was there 1 year. In all honesty, Tom, it's Notre Dame. I mean, that's the place that I'll stop, I'll sit, I'll watch a lot of sports. You know, now having a house here and spending time here and also in Scottsdale, but and my son Mike, you know, knew, and my son and my daughter Sydney and Jake, they all were friends with other athletes and other sports. We'd watch swimming, basketball, lacrosse, soccer. So it really is Notre Dame for me as far as when I'll say, okay, this is the team I want to see win all the time. In pro sports, I don't really have a lot of favorites. I'll be perfectly honest with you. People ask me that all the time, and they're a little surprised. And it's not this, I'm a professional, I'm supposed to be unbiased. No, I don't care about that. If somebody's a fan of somebody, root for them. I don't care. It's not going to change the way I talk about them. But I just don't have a pro team that I really hang my hat on.
Mike, two things before we let you go I have to do, first of all, is Mitch Rosen, our program director, says hello, wants to wish you well. And secondly, how good will Notre Dame be this year, and how good will the Bears be?
Well, man, let me tell you. First, tell Mitch hello. And second, I mean, you're making, as I'm sure Tom could talk about, you're making some shifting on the offensive line. You're going to have a rookie, looks like, starting, I believe. Is Jenkins going to start?
As of right now, he is.
Yeah, so you got a rookie there. You're changing, some other positions. I know Alex Barza looks like he's at left guard. I know he started on the practice squad, done a nice job of moving his way up. I know he's gotten some time. So you look at the O-line. You look at the O-line for Notre Dame. What are they replacing? Four guys? I mean, that's the part. You look at other teams. Pittsburgh is replacing, I think, four or everybody. The Raiders basically got rid of almost their whole line. I mean, that's the position on the field that has to be the most cohesive because it's five guys that have to work together. So how quickly can you become unified and effective? I think that's a huge thing for Notre Dame. Plus, you got a new quarterback, you got new O-line, you got new receivers, you got every level of defense. You have some new players. While you do have some stars, though, Hamilton's a stud at safety, and you got a stud young kid at tight end as well. So it all for Notre Dame is going to come down to how well did you recruit that next level of player that now has to step in and kind of keep things going. And for the Bears, the thing for me, guys, I don't know what you think. Listen, for Pace and Nagy, I mean, this is the year for them. They got to throw the ball downfield. I mean, you look last year, you had two guys who averaged over 10 yards a catch. One was right at 10-something. I think Robinson was like at 12-something. I mean, they got to throw the ball down the field. You got to push it. And everybody loves Justin Fields and says, start the guy. You name me the last team that did great starting a rookie quarterback. Justin's going to get his time. He's going to get in there. I don't know. I doubt it'll be right in the beginning. Let's see what Dalton can do. But you got to throw the ball down the field a little more. That'll help open up the running game a little more as well. But you just see too many short passes, at least from my view, in that offense. And hopefully they'll get the ball downfield a little more this year.
Hey, Mike, I can't thank you enough. I really appreciate you coming on with us. It's been a big thrill for me. And, again, I admire your whole family and brothers and, you know, some of the best I've ever met. So thanks to the Golic family and thanks to you specifically.
Oh, thanks, Tom. Appreciate it. Hopefully we'll get to run our paths. Our paths will cross soon. We can hang out a bit.
Okay. Thanks, Mike. Thanks, Mike. Mike Golic, radio legend. Yeah. And also getting back in the college football booth this season, calling college football games. That's great to hear him. And it's great to hear the reunion. You guys have it goes way back to 1981. I didn't realize how far back it went, but
yeah, both, you know, like teenagers. Meeting Bob Golic, and, you know, he kind of had a kind of legendary status at Notre Dame. And then I got to play with, there's a middle brother, Greg Golic, who I played with also. And then I played with Mike at Notre Dame. I also played with Mike at the Miami Dolphins.
Oh, yeah.
And I played against him, you know, in the other game. So I just, it's just a family that I really have a tremendous amount of respect for. Great, you know, parents that, you know, that the Golic family was raised by. So I'm really appreciative of Mike coming on.
Mike Golic going to call 13 games this year for Learfield IMG Radio Network. He back calling college football the way his career started in broadcasting. We're going to stick with the NFL theme when we come back. There's some news about Aaron Rodgers you want to hear. We will discuss it with Mike Florio next. Mullane Haas, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. Chicago Sports Station. FootballTalk.com, NBC Sports, Twitter.com/ProFootballTalk.
Day by day, day by day, we get better and better.
We get better and better.
We get
beat.
NFL Insider, Mike Florio.
Mullane Haas, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. Tom Thayer in for Mully, and we love our time with Mike Florio, so we go out to the Home Run In hotline. Try your pizza on the grill this summer. Visit homerunin.com for unique grilling recipes and more. Good morning, Mike. How are you?
Doing great. How are you guys today?
Doing well, doing well. So have to ask you right away, Adam Schefter tweeted out this morning, the Packers offered Aaron Rodgers a two-year contract extension that would have tied him to Green Bay for five more seasons and made him the highest-paid quarterback and player in all of football. Rodgers declined the offer. How would you interpret that?
Well, here's how I interpret it. Number one, it's old news that's being dusted off for purposes that are yet to be determined. It could be the Packers want to get this out there in advance of Monday's shareholder meeting, where Mark Murphy, the CEO of the team, is likely to have to deal with some saltiness from Packers fans who have been dealing with this for months now and haven't had a chance to really voice their displeasure. I think it's important for the Packers to make it known they've tried to placate Aaron Rodgers. And I think it's meaningless without knowing the structure of this extension.
you could put a couple of phony years on the back end of his current deal, and it averages out to more than $45 million a year, which is currently the high watermark. But if he's not going to ultimately play those 2 years because the money isn't guaranteed, it doesn't matter. What matters at this point to Rodgers, or at least what mattered as of the end of the season, I think that ship has probably sailed, is having the kind of security that prevented the Packers from treating him as a one-year-at-a-time employee. That's what he was trying to get away from. He doesn't want to have this constant threat of the Packers moving on to Jordan Love hovering over him. So this contract, if he had accepted it, may not have changed that at all. It may have just been window dressing, and that's probably one of the reasons why he rejected it. So I'm fascinated by the story behind the story. I don't think it's accidental that Schefter reported it today, but it's been out there for months. But it arrives at a time when the Packers are getting ready to have to deal with their fans, and their fans are surely upset about everything that's gone on.
Mike, a lot of quarterback questions I need to ask you. I don't know whether to ask you about Tebow or Brady, so I'm going to go with Brady. You know, in the course of my career, I tweaked my knee in training camp, had a little cartilage tear, but I knew I wasn't going to miss any games. You're just going to play with a little bit of discomfort. So when you get the Brady issue going on that, yeah, they talk about a torn MCL, but he played every week and performed the way he did. Why is it an issue that you have to announce that, or why does the NFL want you to need to announce that if you're not going to miss practices and you're not going to miss games?
Well, the NFL is dealing right now with a very delicate balance between promoting player health and safety, and obviously, and this has been around for years. It doesn't get discussed as bluntly in the aftermath of the Saints bounty scandal from 2012, but when you know that a guy's injured, and you hear players say this, they want to test that injury. They want to test that injured area. And if people had known that Tom Brady had a torn MCL in his knee or just generally had a knee injury, then that maybe becomes an area of his body that gets tested. Now, given the way he plays, it's not like he's running and cutting and moving a lot. It's just drop back and throw, maybe jump up in the pocket, but not a lot of lateral movement. But the challenge is for the NFL to minimize the situations where there is true inside information that can make a difference in gambling interests, in decisions made by bettors. And if there is inside information, how is that inside information handled by the people who have it? That is one of the major, major challenges for the NFL as legalized gambling spreads throughout the country, because that's where the next scandal is going to come from if the NFL doesn't handle it properly. And if the NFL doesn't handle it properly and there is a scandal, the NFL needs to be concerned about, for example, Congress creating a federal agency that's responsible for policing all of the pro sports in America. That's what the NFL needs to be concerned about. And I think they are concerned about it. And I was told recently that they need to go back and take a closer look at the accountability that applies when teams hide injuries and when players and teams fake injuries. And that's going to be something that I think the NFL is going to be investing time and money into going forward, because they understand. You know, it's one thing years ago, if somebody bets on a game and they get screwed in some way, or there's, you know, inside information that corrupts the process, it's an illegal bet, so who cares? As the bets become legitimate and legal, people in positions of power in government are going to care more about it, because it's the average person's money that's at risk.
Michael Irvin can be outrageous and say things that stand out for their outrageousness, but I don't think he was trying to do that when he said, if you're unvaccinated in the NFL, it means you don't want to win badly enough. And he questioned the commitment of players if they're not vaccinated this season. Do you think that most of the NFL's head coaches or coaches in the league agree with that sentiment?
Well, I think the coaches who believe in the vaccination, or at least who are not anti-vaccine, agree with it. I've heard there are plenty of coaches who have the anti-vaccine mentality, and it shows just how strong this issue is, that it overcomes what ordinarily would be the mindset. You do whatever you have to do to help yourself win. And so, hey, you get this shot and it helps your team win games, then you go get the shot. I mean, think about the substances that players will take without fully knowing the full long-term consequences, or knowing and not caring about the long-term consequences if it helps them play at their highest level today. And I agree with Irvin. Sorry, my dog sees something outside that she's excited about. But I agree with Irvin And I agree with this idea that, hey, if you really are committed to winning this year, you just go get the shot and you live under the 2019 rules. You don't have to worry about the 2020 protocols, and it's easier to develop camaraderie, and it's, you know, you don't have all these other rules you got to worry about. You don't have to worry about guys suddenly being unavailable to play on a Saturday or Sunday because they tested positive. But I think there's going to be a significant percentage of guys who look at what Irvin said and just say, we disagree with you, even though I agree that Irvin makes a hell of a point.
Mike, when you're on the East Coast over there, Trevor Lawrence, he's going to probably be handed the job at Jacksonville. And then you got Justin Fields, who's going to fight for a job in Chicago. But Zach Wilson in New York, what does he need to do so at the end of the season, the fan base and the front office are saying, okay, we made the right choice here?
You know, Zach Wilson is the one guy who was drafted in round one that has nobody there who could even remotely compete with him. I don't think they still have added a veteran quarterback to the mix. It's a guy who was drafted last year named James Morgan, another guy who was undrafted. So it's going to be Zach Wilson. And, you know, I don't know what the bar is for the Jets fans to feel like there's hope for the future. I think something within, you know, spitting distance of 500, if they could get 6-11, I'm still having a hard time remembering to do 17 games in my calculation of projected records, but something like 6-11 or 7-10, you know, if they can win a few games they're not supposed to win, and they're probably not supposed to win many this year, that's the kind of thing that will create a sense of hope for 2022. And, you know, if we see some moments from Zach Wilson where he does look like Aaron Rodgers or Patrick Mahomes, and I know Chris Sims is a big believer in Zach Wilson based on his film from BYU and the ability to make the throws from every arm angle and every body position, that's the thing that sets a quarterback apart in today's NFL. If we see those kinds of moments from Wilson, then that's the kind of thing that can give Jets fans something they haven't had for a long time, which is true, plausible hope that they could be on the verge of becoming a consistent contender.
Before we let you go, Mike, this would be a big story in Chicago. Not sure how big it is in Las Vegas. Mark Bedain, longtime member of the Raiders organization, team president, resigns yesterday after getting everything done with the stadium and the move. He is walking away. Anything more to that story?
Well, not yet, but I look at it this way. Anytime someone's resignation is announced by his boss and not by him personally, it makes me wonder what the truth really is, because this came out of the blue from Mark Davis. There's got to be a story there that I'm sure people are trying to get to the bottom of as to why Mark Bedain left, because, yeah, he should be doing his victory lap. They're getting ready to welcome fans into that stadium for the first time, and he quits just weeks before they can finally celebrate this thing that he was so instrumental in building. So I have a feeling there's going to be more that comes out on this one. The timing is just strange. The circumstances are stranger. Now Bedain may never say anything because part of his severance agreement may require him to be quiet, but I have a feeling somebody's going to figure out something more than what we saw yesterday.
Great stuff, Mike. Talk to you next week.
Thanks, Mike.
All right. See you guys. Take care.
Mike Florio, ProFootballTalk.com. Good stuff. When we come back, it's transition time. Mullinghaw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
O'Reilly Auto Parts.